This is HuffPost Live. I'm Josh Sepps. And college sports is big business. Rakes in hundreds of millions of dollars a year. But the players themselves, of course, don't see any of it. Football players at Northwestern University are rebelling, planning to join a new college athlete labor union. And the National Labor Relations Board has ruled that, yes, Northwestern's scholarship football players are technically employees. So should college athletes be paid? How might a player's union change the game? We're joined by Derek Anderson, former NBA and NCAA basketball champion, Scott Jennings, columnist for the Courier Journal and former advisor to President George W. Bush, Andrew Zimbalist, professor of economics at Smith College and author of Unpaid Professionals, and Yael Averbush, a midfielder for the U.S. women's national soccer team and former NCAA soccer player. Derek, thanks for being here, all of you. Kick it off with you, Derek. Just to get to your level of success in the NCAA, how many hours a week did you put into basketball? I'm interested, versus how many you put into non-sporting college activities.
Well, they gave us an hour plan that they told us to stick by, but of course we didn't have jobs, so we couldn't work. And what we did was morning individuals. Of course you had class, then you came through and lifted weights throughout the day, maybe a 12 or 1 o'clock session. And you have practice from 3 to 6, with film lunching at 7 to 8. So we would probably spend, out of a 12, 14-hour day, we would probably use it about 8 hours of some kind of basketball-related activities. And that was throughout the year, except even summer times we did summer camps, but you worked on your game as well as school. But it was I would say 70% of our college time was considered was basketball, the sports.
I mean, 8 hours a day, that's a job. Did you feel like an employee?
Literally. Yeah, I did every day, especially as hard as we practiced.
I want to take a look at a clip because on Monday night, the UConn Huskies won the national championship. And in a press conference leading up to the game, UConn's star point guard, Shabazz Napier, talked about the struggles of being a student athlete. Take a look at this.
As student athletes, get utilized for what we do so well, and we definitely, we're definitely best to get a scholarship to our universities. But at the end of the day, that doesn't cover everything. You know, we do have hungry nights that we don't have enough money to get food, and sometimes needed money is money is needed. I don't think you should stretch it out to hundreds of thousands of dollars for players. Because that's not a lot of times guys don't know how to handle themselves for money. So, but I think, Northwestern has an idea, and we'll see where it goes.
Derek, he's talking about having hungry nights where he couldn't even fill his belly while the universities make huge amounts of money off this. Do you relate to that? Was that true for you?
It was true in an instance where some weekends that I wanted to go see my son at the time, I didn't get a chance to go see him because I couldn't get up there. I didn't have any gas or I didn't have a car. And couldn't get on a Greyhound, and it was difficult nights, but it wasn't nights that were going to take away from me as a person, because I had a place to sleep and I had, a study habit and I had things around. But there were plenty of nights that the guys would wear the same jogging suit all week because we didn't get any money, to get any new clothes, so we would just turn our jogging suit inside out, and wear it the next day, and hopefully nobody would really notice. But there were plenty of days. But again, I'm like Shabazz, we don't need hundreds of thousands. But I think my jersey was the number one selling jersey my senior year in 97. And I saw zero money of that. And I think if it was even to give to me, to give until a dormant, later in my life or to my kids, some kind of money that if it was just, I don't know, maybe $50,000 a year and it would have been saved up after he sold my jersey for my children. There's some kind of way that they can compensate the players. And again, we don't need cash in our hands all the time. If we did, maybe, $400 or $500 a month, that would get us food, clothing, trips to see your family. But, I think there should be something, in return for all the things that we've done for that university, especially since they're making so much money off of us.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. You say you don't need hundreds of thousands of dollars. You don't need a huge amount of money, but that's not really how capitalism works, right? I mean, it's not based on need. If you're contributing something that creates tens of millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases in annual revenue, then you should get a look in on that. Just to put this in context for people, I want to take a look at what college football in particular actually makes. These are the top five most valuable teams, okay? Texas is $129 million. Notre Dame, $112 million. Penn State, $100 million. LSU, $96 million. University of Michigan, $94 million. And then when you break it down into the average cost of what a college football player is actually worth, let's take a look at the top five, right? Average Texas player is worth $578,000. The Average Michigan player, 470,000. The average Alabama player, 453. Auburn, 428. An average Georgia player is worth 416,000 bucks. I want to go to Scott now. Scott, you took to the op-ed pages of USA Today to speak out against a players' union. Why? Why shouldn't the players get a cut of the revenue they produce?
Well, actually, my position was I oppose the idea of a players' union, but I do think players should be compensated. I sit here in Louisville, Kentucky, where Derek Anderson is from and played here in the state, and you still see people walking around Kentucky today wearing Derek Anderson jerseys. So there's no question that his value to the marketplace was substantial and actually still is substantial. So in my piece, I took to the position that the player should be paid. But I don't necessarily think introducing a union into the mix is the right idea. I'm not certain that these players need to have someone in between them and their fair market value. I do believe that introducing a union into college athletics could impact the camaraderie. It could also force certain players into situations where they're being organized against other kinds of players. I mean, somebody like a Derek Anderson or a University of Texas football player is certainly worth more in the commercial marketplace than some players from other sports. And so I think somebody like a Derek Anderson should be compensated based on his marketplace value. In my piece, I looked at a couple of different plans. One was based on an idea like people in the music business are paid, where they get a little bit of money up front and then they get royalties based on what happens after. And in some cases in that plan, the royalties would be put into an escrow account that would go to the player once they got their degree. And then, you know, I'd also talk to ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Bielis, who says, why would we make them wait? Let's just give them the money they're due today based on the value they bring to the marketplace today. So there really isn't, in my mind, as I did the research on my piece, a unified vision for how to pay the players or when to pay the players. There does seem to be a growing consensus that players should be paid. I just happen to believe that we shouldn't put unions in between players and their fair market value, because it could have negative impacts. But I think somebody like Derek Anderson or a Texas football player or anyone else who is doing the kinds of hours and work that a high-level college athlete is absolutely should be paid based on the value they bring to the marketplace. It's a $16 billion a year industry. These players are the ones generating that revenue, and they deserve a piece of it.
Yael, you were a college athlete. I wonder whether you think that it's possible to get, I mean, we just heard Scott talk about their fair value. There shouldn't necessarily be a union intermediary in between the fair value of the athlete and his employers. I suppose we can think of them as employers now. Is there any other way, though, for an individual to be able to go and trade himself alone? I mean, even movie stars have the Screen Actors Guild. I mean, there are unions for lucrative professions.
Yeah, you know, as an athlete who is part of a soccer program, who is, you know, the soccer program at the University of North Carolina is very prominent, however, you know, doesn't bring in revenue to the university that I know of, or at least nowhere near what a lot of these football programs are bringing in. So I can kind of see both sides of the issue. And I do think that in many ways, I often felt like an employee of my university. Now that I think of it, you know, when a lot of college soccer players ask me as they come out of college what it's like to be a professional player, I tell them, honestly, it's the same thing you've been doing for 4 years just without going to class. So I know that, you know, I definitely put in a time commitment and treated my sport as if I was a professional player. And I represented the university. I was in advertising with a UNC crest, which now I realize can be monetized. But, you know, I would never do that now and represent something without having my agent speak to them and make some kind of agreement. So I can see both sides of the issue for sure. And I'm coming, I think, from a kind of a middle ground because I was what I consider an employee of my university. However, it wasn't part of a program that was bringing in large revenue.
Mm. Andrew, I'd love to get your thoughts about just the kinds of numbers that we're talking about here. This is such an alien concept for me coming from Australia, where there is not a college profession. You know, I mean, sport is either professional or it is nothing. The problem in Australia is not people not getting paid, it's that you have to have salary caps so that people don't get paid too much. What kind of proportion? There are no colleges or universities in Australia which are essentially sporting institutions with some classes on the side. But if an economist were to look at some colleges in America, what proportion of their income is actually coming from their sporting divisions?
It really depends on the college. Some colleges have 5,000 students and play at the top level in FBS subdivision. Some have 30,000. Some have graduate programs, some don't. So the proportion will generally be somewhere between 2 and 7 or 8%.
And at the colleges that are the most heavily into sports?
It could go up to 5, 6, 7, 8% in those cases where they have an FBS football team that goes to a BCS bowl game, where they have basketball programs that end up going to the March Madness, you can get up above 5% of total revenue coming from sports. Sports, however, it's important to point out the athletic programs in Division 1A or FBS have an average loss on an operating basis of $12 million a year, and that's without even including some capital expenses. So even though a football program or a particular basketball program might generate a modest operating surplus, the overall athletics department is, generally speaking, running a substantial deficit.
Got it. When you say that it could be 5, 6, 7% of a university's revenue, if we're talking about programs that are bringing in $150, $160 million a year, that implies that the university is bringing in billions of dollars a year. Is that right?
Well, there's only one program that I know of that's up at $150 million a year, and that's University of Texas. University of Texas brings in a lot of grant money. It has graduate programs, medical schools. So, again, in a case where you have very successful programs, you might get up close to 10%, but you're not generally getting over that.
Got it. Scott, I want to come back to you because in the op-ed, you wrote about a concern that you have, which is that a players' union could sort of ruin the camaraderie. You wrote the following. You said, unionizing college athletes could ruin the camaraderie. What would stop an All-American from demanding first-class airfare and penthouse suites as opposed to other scholarship athletes that fly coach and share a regular hotel room? After all, they could argue they are more valuable employees than the third stringers. Valid point. Can't the same argument sort of be made of any workplace? I mean, I don't earn what my producer earns or what my president earns. We all have different values.
Sure. And, you know, it's interesting. When I talked to Jay Bielis about that, he said, you know, look, I think each individual player has a value in the marketplace and they should be able to be compensated accordingly. So in his mind, he was thinking that, you know, you might have a range of individual payments to players. He also raised the idea of perhaps doing it where you have a salary cap, so you would set an amount that could be paid to a team inside of a university, and then it would be up to the university to decide what player could be paid what, as long as they came in under the salary cap. I do think this, you know, the Derek Andersons of the world and the star players of the world, they have an extreme value. They deserve to be compensated because they are generating a lot of interest, a lot of TV money. I mean, you know, in Louisville, where we are, this media market has more college basketball eyeballs on television than any other DMA in America, including New York, LA, and the other larger markets. And so there's a value for that, and that should be recognized. But you also have other players that are on the field, that are on the court, that are part of the team, that have to be part of the process as well. And I think they should also be compensated. So again, I think one of the issues here is no one's come up with a great idea yet on how to do this from a systematic perspective. But I do think we are now starting to realize that the NCAA has caused many of its own problems. I mean, they pay the president of the NCAA $2 million a year. Coaches make a ton of money. Athletic directors make a ton of money. And people are starting to wonder, well, if these people can make money in the system, why can't the players? And so, again, I don't believe we need a union in the middle of the players, because I think, A, unions have proven over the last several years to be full of corruption, which was pointed out in my piece. B, I don't think we should ruin camaraderie. C, I don't think we need the specter of people, you know, trying to go on strike the night before the Rose Bowl or the night before the national championship game for the NCAA basketball tournament. I think that would also ruin college athletics. That doesn't mean we can't find a way to pay players. I think another aspect that should be looked at is whether we want to use a system to encourage education. One of the royalties and escrow system points was if you set up an escrow account that can only go to a player once they get their degree, you might find more players coming back to get their degrees. Only 2% of NCAA athletes make it in the pros. And so you've got a huge pool of people out there that might well want to give it a try. And if it doesn't work out, come back to college, get their degree, and then bang, they get an escrow account that pays them for their fair market value and also recognizes the value of getting a college degree, which I think we would all agree in this chat is a very valuable thing to do. So I think some ideas have been put forward that would be very beneficial to the players. I just don't think introducing unions into it is going to add any benefit to them whatsoever.
Andrew, you were shaking your head in there. Disagree?
Well, look, first of all, it's not up to Scott whether the athletes want to unionize or not. It's up to the athletes. Whether Scott has an ideological prejudice against unions is irrelevant. Secondly, the numbers he's using are incorrect. Thirdly, there's another issue here, which is that college sports, even in the NCAA Constitution and historically, are supposed to be part of an educational process. And to just sort of say, okay, we're going to turn it all over to the marketplace. What happens when you turn it all over to the marketplace? You have some players earning $1 million, some players earning $20,000. A lot of players aren't going to earn anything. And all of those players are going to have to pay payroll taxes for the entire value of any scholarship. We need a system that recognizes what college sports are supposed to be, recognizes that they're subordinate, supposed to be subordinate to the educational process, and move on from there.
Derek, what do you make of all this, and specifically the idea of camaraderie? Do you think that there would be, it would have a deleterious effect on camaraderie if players were earning different amounts?
Well, I think I agree with the gentleman, but I think Scott has got a point. Unionizing it means we should have the proper people doing it. You know, we can't just do it as our own and expect it to go 100%. But if you get like the NBA Players Association, we have a union, but we still go on strike because everyone gets it. I think what it is, it's a universal situation where it's an issue because, like you said that we have to worry about paying taxes and we have to do all these other things. But if you're not financially literate about these things, you need these things. And we need to put the proper people in place. Because if it's just about us giving a scholarship, okay, then don't sell you know, my images. Don't do all these things to make money because NCAA is a product and they built it just like McDonald's. You don't go in and complain because you're better than the other workers at the restaurant, but you do realize that if you're working overtime, you need to be compensated. It's a very simple fix, but the problem is how to fix it and who to fix it. And I think the only about how to fix it is basically how are we going to start doing this? How are we going to start getting everyone on the same page? Because everyone sees that the money that they make in University of Kentucky basketball, we pay for almost all our other sports. But that doesn't mean we can't pay the 12 men on our bench $20,000 maybe, you know, our star player at 50,000. You know, I don't think anyone's going to look at that any different because most of these kids, again, they need to graduate. That's our problem. We're sending all these kids out in the sports world, but you're getting a bad product in a person because they're not developing as with character issues. Mm. You know, that's where I find the issue at. Get some guys that we're going to go finish school, and if he finishes a 4 or 5 year process, he has $150,000 waiting after he graduates. He's not worrying about the NBA, but he's actually grown as a person and as a in a workplace. It goes in society with $150,000 in cash, a degree, and a process that he can enjoy from playing sports.
Yeah, what Andrew was just saying there really resonated with me in that, you know, we've kind of got college back to front in some of these scenarios, that we have to remind ourselves that college is first and foremost supposed to be an educational experience.
Absolutely.
If sports
Absolutely.
Can also happen, then that's an added bonus. But did you ever feel, Yale, when you were at college, that it was a little bit of an upside-down, topsy-turvy world?
Yeah, it was. But you know, when you're young, you're just excited.
Derek, I just want to get Yale in again.
Okay,
stand
sorry.
By. I'll come back in a sec, mate.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. And I'll admit, you know, I'm a very serious student and my education matters to me a lot, but I still haven't graduated from college. So, you know, I'm one of these players you may talk about. You know, I'm a professional player currently and I don't have my degree. I know that for me, while I was in college, I was thinking about I'm going to become a professional player when I'm finished. So I took the minimum number of classes I could take each semester to make sure I could get my rest and be my best out in the field. And that did affect my education. Not that I don't think it's important and plan to eventually go back and graduate, but absolutely during my 4 years of college eligibility while I was playing soccer, my focus was on being part of the soccer program and contributing to that. And secondarily, when I could go to class, I did my best to go to class.
Yeah. Okay. I want to take a look at a recent press conference because Northwestern head football coach Pat Fitzgerald was asked about wanting his players to vote no against the players' union. And take a look at what he had to say.
Your hope is that they vote no.
I believe it's in their best interest to vote no. And on the research that I've done, and I'm going to stick to the facts, and I'm going to do everything in my power to educate our guys, and our university is going to do that, to give them all the resources that they need to get the facts. And that's not just going to be me, and we'll work through that together as we move forward, but that's what I believe that is in their best interest.
Andrew, what would, if you were the emperor of the world, what kind of regime would you put in place to have an equitable outcome here?
So the NCAA needs really substantial reform. It needs reform in the way it's organized, and it needs to take care of athletes' needs. There needs to be medical insurance that covers people for the whole year. There needs to be disability insurance. There should be a cost of living stipend that might be $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a year. All of those things should be happening for FBS athletes. They're not happening. They haven't happened so far because the FBS fundamentally is a trade association of coaches and athletic directors and conference commissioners who rake off the top in this system. As it's been said before, some of them make $5-7 million a year while the athletes don't get paid. That all has to change. But doing it through unionization and doing it through the marketplace is not the right way to go. The way to go is to recognize that there's a substantial problem in the NCAA and it needs to be confronted head on. That organization needs reform.
Scott, do you want to respond to that or follow up on it?
Yeah, I don't fundamentally disagree with anything he just said. I do think the marketplace matters because, you know, in America, you know, you go places based on your own talents and your own skill. You know, when I was writing the piece, somebody I spoke to, Jay Bielis from ESPN, said if an English major at a college on full scholarship wrote a best-selling novel that landed on the bestsellers list and they made millions of dollars based on their own talent while still a student, they'd be applauded because of their individual talent and their individual achievement. But the players aren't treated the same way. They're treated much differently. So I do believe that each individual player has some value that is unique to them. I also believe that the players who maybe wouldn't be the kinds of revenue generators that your superstar players are or in the bigger sports, football and basketball, do deserve some sort of a payment. That's why I included in my piece the idea of the escrow system, which was we were talking about earlier, the incentive to go back and get your degree, to truly incentivize that educational experience. If you set up the escrow system and have the account available after you earn your degree, I think that would put a lot of people in a place where they might want to give the pros a try. And if it doesn't work out, then they get to come back to school. They get to finish their degree, but they're still compensated for the revenues they generated for the university at the time. I think that entire system can be set up and run without the involvement of unions. I think it could be run by the NCAA, but as the professor said, the NCAA is going to need reform before it could be trusted to run such a system. But I do believe a system could be set up that compensated everyone, but still recognized that some individual players have an extreme value in the marketplace. Derek Anderson is a great example. He's one of the most famous players in Kentucky history. Everybody here in Kentucky loves Derek Anderson. You still see his jerseys on the street. That has a value. It had a value then. And you know what? It still actually has a value today. I'm sure he still appears in marketing materials today.
Right.
At the So I think ongoing, we even need to look at what is the value of a Derek Anderson to a program like the University of Kentucky, even 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road, because, you know, that value doesn't just end when Derek Anderson goes to the NBA. It continues on because the school still takes advantage of it.
Sure. Yale, if there were one of these escrow systems that held the money until you graduated, would you go back and graduate?
Absolutely. You know, I plan on it anyway, but I think that would be a huge incentive. But just listening to this conversation, I mean, I'll admit, I am nowhere near close to having a full understanding of this. But I think that's important to take into account because what happens is that while these are all great points conceptually, when you actually turn it over to a group of college athletes and talk about a union or discussing some of these issues, you know, I've been part of professional teams that have discussions about this where there are a few star players and the rest of the team are kind of support players and so very important to the process and the team's success, it becomes really complicated to decide who deserves what and how to do that in a way that doesn't completely affect the dynamics of the team.
Right. Also, I mean, I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but these are kids. I mean, like, what did I even know I was in college? Like, how do you, Derek, wrap us up here. You know, what do you want to say in defense of either the unionization or otherwise of college football?
I agree with everyone. There's the process, the marketplace, like Scott said, and Andrew, I think everything is perfect in what they're saying, but the kids shouldn't be able to do it because a lot of these kids won't be professional athletes who's speaking on our behalf because a lot of these kids wouldn't be doing it if they were professional in our position. So I think we should have the professional people who do it. So send those guys to the NCAA. So if it's not just a union, you send those union kids to learn from the NCAA. They did find out what they need to do. That we all have board meetings like everyone else does at major corporations. We sit there and have a board and we get it together and we finalize it. But there is a marketplace for it, and I think it needs to be handled accordingly. And it can't be done by just kids in college because they're not educated yet like anyone. They have to find out. But if we get a group of people with those kids in college, and we should get a stipend after every year, like Andrew said, $3,000 or $4,000. But then when you're done basketball, you still get money back and your health issues or insurance whatnot. It helps with society, not just sports. You keep worrying about sports, but society is being more affected than anything. And again, as a professional athlete who's made money, I'm not concerned with the fact that they're making money off of me. It's the fact that they're not giving it back to someone else who needs it.
Yeah.
So if it's not to me, give it to someone else who needs it, who's going to benefit. The 12th man on my bench might need that $150,000 for my jersey. So I would rather give it to them than the NCAA keep giving it to these people sitting around on the board for making $2-5 million. That's right. What I don't agree with.
Yeah, I mean, if someone told me to go and start a union and to figure out what I was worth in collaboration with all of my colleagues, I wouldn't even know where to begin, and I'm not a 20-year-old kid. Derek Scott, Andrew Yale, thanks so much for being on HuffPost Live. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
For more information on the Northwestern Football Players' quest to form a players' union, check out the resource well below. And stick around. We've got plenty more great conversations coming up right here on HuffPost Live.